Hi, my name's Chris Scott, and this interview was recorded for the UK Wine Show. For the latest news and terms and conditions, go to ukwineshow.co.uk. Hi, my name's Chris Scott, and I'm here with Ian Bailey from Sweezel Crystal Glasses. How are you, Ian?
Very well, thank you. We're famed for having an easily pronounceable name.
I tell you what, after a couple
of shots, Sweezel. It's easier to understand.
I think after a few glasses of wine, I could go, oh, I might get this Riesel out. Yeah.
Certainly complex names that they can come up with because of the nature of the language and how it constructs words.
Well, what we're going to do today anyway, we're going to talk a bit about wine glass shapes.
Okay.
I've had a look at some of your different glasses yesterday, and there's some real funky shapes in there. I'd like to get an overview first, though, about the different glass shapes. We'll start off with just normal wine glasses. We interviewed Riedel quite a few years ago, and they talked about different areas of the tongue being sensitive and therefore constructing a glass shape to hit certain areas and all this sort of carry on, which I didn't 100% get on board with at the time because they based their assumptions on some work that a German did quite a while ago, and most people now discount it. But you've got an interesting take on that. Do you want to just give us your view on how the mouth works with regards to wine glasses?
Well, I think the first important thing to understand is that the upper surface of your tongue is covered with taste buds.
Yep.
And those taste buds can taste any taste.
You know, people talk about acidity on the side and bitterness at the back. And I agree with you there that you can actually taste it all over the tongue.
Yes.
I've done experiments where I put sweetness in the middle of my tongue and kept my tongue out of my mouth because you're supposed to get sweetness at the tip and you still taste the sweetness in your mouth.
Yes. And the reason, what I would actually suggest is the reason is how our brains learn. Because our brains receive so much information and it's so difficult to sift through, the brain learns to specialize. So your brain may decide is that it'll use a bit of the tongue to take certain signals relating to acidity, for example, first. That area will still taste everything else, but it will taste it as secondary or tertiary considerations. Yep. So it's just to help your brain work out what it's tasting. The concept of having wine bowl shapes that affect where the wine drops onto the tongue, yes, the wine bowl shapes do that. But it's not possible to say that every single individual's tongue has associations in the same way for their brain.
Yeah, now that makes sense. I actually quite like that. I mean, that I can actually understand that because I disagreed a bit with what Rita was saying. But when we tasted their wines, they were sort of right. Their theories were wrong, but their conclusions were good. And it bothered me. It's really bothered me for a long time.
Well, that comes down to another element, which is to do with bowl shapes.
The bowl is the base of the glass, the
yes.
Round bit at the bottom.
So, for instance, if you think of the classic glass that you encounter the most, which we would call a Bordeaux, and some people like to call a tulip shape.
Like the shape of a tulip, really, before
yes.
It opens up.
Now, generally, that's one of the best all-round glasses for wine. And what that particular shape of glass will do is it will help to emphasize acidity, it will help to emphasize minerality and spiciness. So it builds character.
How does it work?
In a wine. Because most people have these associations around the center of the tongue. And what that glass is going to do is put the wine onto the center of the tongue first. So what we're dealing here with is a primary association. Then all the other flavors come through, but your brain is focused on the first thing
yep.
that it picked up. To give you an example of how we would apply this for restaurants and hotels, if you had a young Chianti, now the trait of Chianti is to have spiciness and minerality to it, we would recommend putting it into a Bordeaux glass to actually enhance that element. Mm-hmm. But if you had a Chianti Reserva, which has lots of spiciness, lots of minerality already, we would never, ever recommend you putting it into a Bordeaux glass.
Because you're OTTing that element.
Yes, because you're actually overemphasizing something that's already emphasized. And an important point for me to make here is to say that our view of wine and glass is that there are actually two very different strands in operation. One strand is to do with wine tasting and the appreciation of the complexity and the elements within a wine.
Mm-hmm.
And that is completely different from appreciation and enjoyment of the wine when you're just drinking.
Okay, so that makes sense. When I'm tasting wine, I'm analysing the wine. But when I'm sitting with my mates and enjoying a glass of wine, I think about it for a bit normally, but then I just crack into the wine.
And I think it's a truism to say that if you soften a wine when people are drinking in the restaurants, you make it more palatable and more people will enjoy it.
And more food friendly as well, usually.
Yes.
How many bowl shapes are there? Are there lots of different shapes? And there seems to be a range of different sizes and all sorts of carry-on.
There are many different variations, but most are just variations on a theme. So the first type we concentrated on there was the Bordeaux.
Yep.
Then, of course, you have the Burgundy, which is the very full bowl. Now, that bowl, again, serves a specific function. It will always soften a wine. So it will soften tannins. It will soften minerality. It will soften acidity.
And how does it do that?
Because it tends to put the wine on the front of the tongue where you're tasting fruitiness and sweetness before you taste acidity and minerality.
Okay. Yeah?
So again, you can't get rid of the actual taste that exists in the wine. But because the brain associates fruitiness with that wine before it associates tannin, you remember the fruit.
Yeah, that's
That's how we can soften the wine. It's your perception that gets softened.
Yeah, okay. No, that's interesting. There's some work we did with some podcasts we did with a guy called Tim Hanai a wee while ago, and he seemed to think that it's the brain is all about perception. It's all about almost not so much what the wine tastes like, but the way our brain thinks it'll taste like is more important than what it actually tastes like.
Yes.
That's a bit like what you're saying, really, is like first impression counts. Once you've got the first impression, your brain's formed its opinion. It almost becomes a bit blinkered. Yeah.
The easiest way to understand that is to think of aromas. So when most people nose a wine and they sense aromas, if they're not trained sommeliers, they'll recognise the aromas. It's the problem for their brain is trying to think of a name.
Yeah.
So the brain is struggling to find an association. Now, if it finds an association with something that you personally like, you'll think, oh, this wine's going to be good for me. If it finds an association with something you don't like, it may think, ugh, actually, this is going to be a horrible wine. A classic example of that would be if you take a white wine that has an aroma of elderflower.
Mm-hmm.
To some people, elderflower, oh, that's nice. To some people, cat pee, I'm not sure that is so nice.
Yeah.
And it's just how the brain makes those associations.
Okay. All right, let's get back to the bowl shape. You said that Burgundy has got big bowls.
Yes.
Because you want to soften.
This helps to soften the wine. It helps the alcohol to be released from the wine.
So you're talking about the alcohol evaporating off the wine?
Yes, because that's very harsh on the nose, the alcohol. And the reason why they used to call them Burgundy glasses and that name stuck is that Burgundy had a tradition of laying down wines for many years that grew in alcoholic concentration as a result. So they tried to bring out the plumminess and the fruitiness of the wine and suppress the alcohol to make the wine more enjoyable to drink.
Okay, yeah, that makes sense, because if you're aging a wine, you lose fruitiness, and fruitiness hides alcohol.
Yes.
But alcohol doesn't change as it ages, so you end up with a wine that perceives to be higher alcohol as it gets older.
Yes.
That doesn't, and then you enhance the fruitiness back for an older wine to mask the alcohol. That makes a lot of sense. I can understand that.
And also, they aged in oak often. That increased the tannin content.
Yeah.
To soften the tannin content. For instance, many women don't like tannins.
Yeah, they're slightly more sensitive to it than men as a grouping. Not always, but okay, interesting. All right, and then I saw a really funny-shaped glass on your stand as well, which I've seen occasionally, but I've never taken as a serious glass. Is like normally a bowl goes round, but this was almost like a V going out. What's that shape called?
What you're thinking about is the modern sommelier glasses where we have a deeper, more angular bowl.
Okay, yeah.
Yeah? And the reason for that is
instead of it being bowl-shaped, it's...
Yes, instead of being rounded at the base, it's more pointed. And on those, that's to increase the agitation when you swirl the wine. So it's a design feature that's encouraging the release of the aroma.
So there's less wine in the bottom of the glass. A bowl, because of its roundness, has a large amount of wine holding it.
Yes.
So what's the idea? You have a less wine because it's going to a point
at the
bottom.
With that deeper base, when you agitate, you swirl the wine, you fold the wine in on itself.
Yep.
And you gradually release more aroma.
And you get more oxygen into the wine as well. So the surface area to the volume of wine. There's not much wine compared to the surface area, compared to maybe a bowl where you get a lot more volume of wine. So therefore, when you're agitating it, you get the same amount of wine getting lumped into it because the surface area is the same, but you've got a lot less wine for that oxygen to go into. Is that?
Well, the agitation is to increase the exposure of the wine to oxygen. So if you think when you pour, let's take a step back. If you go to a restaurant and the restaurant says, you order a red wine, they say, shall we uncork the wine now? Well, if they uncork the wine and leave it in the bottle, that has absolutely zero impact on the wine.
You've got to have a glass first.
Well, basically they should decant the wine.
Yeah.
And virtually every wine benefits from being decanted. But if they don't, when they pour the wine into your glass, they should only pour to the widest point of the bowl so that a maximum amount of that pour is exposed to oxygen.
Yep.
And if you swirl the wine, you'll get oxygen, more oxygen into the wine. So it's not just the surface, you're bringing it up from the bottom.
Yep.
If we make that a deeper bowl at that point, we create more agitation in the swirl, you get the oxygen in faster, that releases more aroma, and you'll get thereby more flavour out of the wine.
Okay, and you call that a sommelier glass?
We would call that a sommelier feature. So okay. It tends to go into our sommelier glasses.
Why wouldn't you want normal wine people to drink that? It sounds like it'd make the wine better, a bit of oxidation in the breathing.
Well, it would, but most people don't know to do that. So they go to the restaurant, they order the wine, it's poured into the wine glass, they drink it. There's no agitation, nothing like that occurs.
Would you say that these straight-sided ones or these, you know, I don't know what they are, they're almost like a cone, aren't they, coming in, and then they go to a bowl. Are they a better glass than a bowl shape then?
They're variations on a theme, and here it becomes very, very complex. And if I just take a step back, we did a range called Top 10, which was specifically designed for wine tasting. So it had broad bases to the bowls to help breathing, and it came in very tightly towards the rim to concentrate aromas.
Yep.
Now, those were brilliant glasses and still are, but what they all do is they will reveal all the strengths and the faults in a wine.
Mm-hmm.
Now, in restaurant service, you don't particularly want to reveal any faults in a wine. You want people to enjoy wines as much as possible. So there's a slightly different need, and that need is to soften complexity rather than bringing it out, to make wines more palatable and easier to drink and easier to work with the foods.
Okay.
So softer, rounder bowls are more beneficial.
Okay. And what about the tapering? You said it focuses the nose. Or focuses the aroma into the nose. For a restaurant, do you want a tight bowl or a tight rim, or are you looking for a wider rim? Because also the rim, if we do follow this where it lays it out on the mouth, if you have a wide rim, it'll hit the sides more, won't it?
How the rim closes in, there's three different criteria that occur there. If you're wine tasting and you want to reveal the complexity of a wine, the more it closes in, the better.
Yep.
Unless you need to release the harshness of high alcohol, in which case you have to open up the bowl a little bit more. From a restaurant's point of view, and from a consumer drinking a wine, it's more awkward to drink from a glass where the rim closes in too tightly. So you have to have a balance as to how far it can close in. And then from a hotel point of view, from the handling of cleaning a glass, the wider the rim, the easier it is to clean. So there's three very different criteria there.
Okay. If I've got a high alcoholic wine, then I want a wide rim so I don't focus the alcohols. Is that right? So
yeah, you want a bigger opening, basically, to get that alcohol away so that you can focus down into fruitiness.
Okay, that makes sense. All right. And is there anything else? We've got the bowl shape, we've done the rim, we've done some funny concave and convex sides.
On the rim, I suppose, because there's a lot of discussion about rolled lips and lips and things like that, just to explain what's happening there. The origin of a rolled lip, it's not originally a design feature. It was the way the glass was cut.
Yeah, a rolled lip is just where you've got a sort of fatness on the yes. lip of it.
So if you imagine molten glass and then someone snipping it almost with scissors, you can imagine how that glass rolls over.
Yep.
Yeah. So that was the origin of a rolled lip. I'm going to say at Zwiesel, when we make our glasses, we actually laser cut and then laser polish the rims. but we can choose to set the lasers to create three different types of rim. So we can create a slight rolled lip to increase resistance to chipping.
Because I have noticed.
Through to an extremely smooth lip. Is there a problem with a rolled lip? A rolled lip improves durability. It can create problems with adulterating the wine if the glass isn't cleaned properly. They're harder to clean at the rim, so if some lipstick gets caught or some food debris. So you just have to pay extra attention when washing them. Now, there is also a theory that's been put about that the problem with a rolled lip is it bounces the wine and keeps it away from the tip of the tongue.
Yeah.
But if we take a step back and go back to what I said about the fact that the tongue can taste everything all over the tongue, it's a very weak and feeble argument.
We bought a load of ISO wine tasting glasses with cut rims, and they were very, you know, very square. There was no rolling on it, and they broke really easily. You know, we were breaking a lot of them, and they cracked down the side. You said last week, I think it was, that if a glass cracks on the side, it's got a chip on the top.
Yes.
Because I always thought the rolled lip was just stronger because there was more glass there. It was like a rim of steel almost stopping it from breaking, but it sounds more like it's a chip with the cut glass.
When you have a very fine rim, it's easier to chip. And actually, a classic example of this is martini glasses, because they're very prone. Whenever you have a glass that angles out, when you're washing it, the odds of it touching another glass and therefore chipping itself.
Yep.
There's a balance in glass design between aesthetic properties and practicality.
Okay, now that makes sense. All right, Ian, I think we'll wrap it up there.
Thank you.
Thank you very much for your time.